the Clinton Street Theater, Arrows Into Infinity takes us on Lloyd's journey from the heights of jazz rock royalty to his life in seclusion and back again. Arrows Into Infinity, the Portland premiere, Thursday, April 9, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton, Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
We're at the Erez Crossing, which is where you enter Gaza from. So apparently, when you go into Gaza, you have to walk until you get to the first town there. And apparently that walk is very dangerous.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of Indigenous Rights, Palestine, and Academic Freedom. Thursday, April 9th at 6:30 p.m. at Portland State University's Smith Center, room 338. Guest speaker will be Stephen Saleta, former Virginia Tech professor. That's Indigenous Rights, Palestine, and Academic Freedom, sponsored by Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights, on Thursday, April 9th, 6:30 p.m. at Portland State University, Smith Center, room 338. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film Occupy the Farm, playing at the Clinton Street Theater Thursday, April 2nd at 6:30 p.m.
Our main concern is water right now.
The university actually shut off our water.
What we're going to be doing is handing buckets over the fence.
Occupy the Farm tells the inspiring story of 200 farmers who occupy the last piece of farmland in California's urban East Bay, planting 15,000 seedlings to feed the community and disrupt plans to build a shopping mall. That's Occupy the Farm, Thursday, April 2nd, 6:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of Susan Griffin, Sustainability in the Soul, Thursday, April 9th, 7 p.m. in the Sanctuary. Susan Griffin is an internationally celebrated writer who will speak on the false divisions our culture makes between body and soul, masculine and feminine, self and other, that allow us to hide from our own knowledge. Again, that's Susan Griffin, Sustainability in the Soul, Thursday, April 9th, 7 p.m. in the Sanctuary. 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present a music documentary that raises the bar for the genre. Arrows Into Infinity, the new documentary about the life of jazz musician Charles Lloyd, Thursday, April 9 at the Clinton Street Theater. Arrows Into Infinity takes us on Lloyd's journey from the heights of jazz rock royalty to his life in seclusion and back again. Arrows Into Infinity, the Portland premiere, Thursday, April 9, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton, Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in Wednesday, April 8th at noon when KBOO's Rita Rega will be talking to the director of Arrows Into Infinity, Dorothy Darr. You'll get a behind-the-scenes glimpse of the making of this important documentary of one of the most influential figures in jazz. That's Wednesday, April 8th at noon, here at KBOO Portland.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the fourth annual Umbrella Festival of Circus and Comedy, April 2nd to April 5th at the Alberta Rose Theater. 4 nights of entertainment, including outsider music legend Artist the Spoon Man, 9 traveling circus troupes, acrobats and aerialists, clowns and cabaret, bands and burlesque, drag and derring do, and more. Again, that's the 4th annual Umbrella Festival of Circus and Comedy, April 2nd through April 5th at the Alberta Rose Theater, 3000 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on issues focused on Black Portland, and share community events happening in the area and elsewhere.
Listen on the radio at 90.7 FM, online at www.kboo.fm, or from your mobile phone at m.kboo.fm.
Follow KBOO on Instagram at KBOO Radio. Ear to the Streets.
Every Monday night at 8 o'clock, you can hear this voice alerting you that
you are about to cross the border.
And then follow the footsteps to a two-hour-long sustained environment of uninterrupted sonic art or new electronic, experimental, or postmodern music. Audio that breaks and rewrites the rules to create entirely new worlds of sound. Where will you be on Mondays at 8 when the door slams shut? Here on KBOO Portland.
Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Offbeat sounds for talented listeners. Broadcasts every other Wednesday at 10 p.m.
There was heaven, and there was earth.
Después de esa pieza, vamos a escuchar una comunicación simpática y cruel con alguien.
That's Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Oregon legislature considers bills to end racial profiling in the state.
We'll get an update on the situation in Fukushima, Japan, which continues to leak radioactive material into the Pacific.
Police in Ferguson, Missouri have agreed to cut back on the amount of tear gas they're using against protesters.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, March 30th, 2015. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Rosalind Scott. This afternoon in Salem, state legislators held a public hearing on a series of bills to end profiling in Oregon. KBOO's Jenka Soderbergh has more.
Oregon is one of 8 states that does not currently ban profiling. The state has no way for people to report cases of profiling, no system for documenting incidents, no data to track the scale of the problem, and no tools to maintain accountability. Currently, each law enforcement agency is left to decide their own definition and process on profiling. The series of laws currently being considered in the Oregon State Legislature would change that and would ban profiling in the state of Oregon. It would also allow for data collection, which is becoming common practice at law enforcement agencies around the country. According to the American Civil Liberties Union, stop and search data is now being collected by 22 states, 4,000 cities, including over half of the 50 largest cities in the United States, and 6,000 police departments. In Oregon, law enforcement agencies in Portland and Washington County have just begun to collect data on profiling. Nael Sacker is a Palestinian-American from Tigard who has experienced racial profiling when police arrived on the scene of an incident in which a fellow motorist had pushed Nael and accused him of being a, quote, terrorist.
I was driving into Costco for shopping for home, and one guy was backing up in the parking lot, so I parked up again, and he kept going backward till another car was behind me, so I couldn't go anywhere. He was kind of mad, came in, and all of a sudden asked, look at me, he said, if you don't know effing car driving, why you don't go to your effing country? And I said, wow, this is like harsh. Why you don't take it easy, buddy? Make long story short, we got an argument, and he pushed me. We find there is a couple of police cars come in, search me, hold me to the car, and hold my arm behind my back, kind of like it's very, very aggressive from them. While the other guy that he attacked me, he was standing nicely. They did not even talk to him or try to search him or anything. I was very upset about that, and I asked him, why you do this? They told me, he accused that I am a terrorist just because of how I look. I'm a Middle Eastern with my skin. Luckily, that there was a couple of witnesses that were around, and they told the police the story, how the other guy was, and he is the guy came in and pushed me. So the police, they asked me, well, it looks like we can, call it off and go. And, I requested that apology from him and from the police even, officers. And he came back and he apologized. And I asked him, he has to admit that this is my country and I have the right to drive in. It's kind of the story made me really think about it, how my color can affect an act that I do not do anything. And, how they, based on my skin color, they search me very aggressively. They hold my arm in the back. It's kind of hurt. It's not right.
The groups supporting the 3 bills to end racial profiling in Oregon are a part of a coalition called Fair Shot for All. This is a new coalition of community and labor groups that have joined together to push for real policy solutions that address economic inequality and give a better future for all Oregonians. The priorities are at the center of the economic debate happening both in Oregon, throughout local communities, and on a national stage. Eduardo Corona is and leader with the Latino community in Washington County, who himself has experienced profiling and says it's a widespread problem within the Latino community.
This is the time that we, as a community, need to raise our voice and tell that this is something happening, and telling to the legislators that we need a law to avoid the racial profiling, even if it's unconscious bias, and the right training for the officers, because everybody, even if we are a small part of the community, because we are a minority, still we're taxpayers. And as taxpayers, we deserve the same high-quality service from the law enforcement officers and agencies as anybody. For myself, I was stopped twice in a week. It's a funny story. I used to drive an old car, and then I get a nicer car, all but nicer. And I was stopped twice, once by the Washington County Sheriff, just because of the color or the tinting of my windows, and the other was the Hillsborough Police Department, because they think there was something wrong with the plates. So, but I suspect that I was a little more too brown for a little nicer car, I think.
Well, there's no state standard on what is racial profiling, and I think that's one of the things that this bill is trying to address. And you mentioned the car, that they had this impression that that you were driving a car that was too nice. In the several of the police shootings, fatal police shootings in Portland, that actual statement was mentioned in the killing of Keaton Otis in 2010 and the killing of James Jahar Perez in 2004. Police actually said that they pulled both of those young men over, considering that they were driving a car that the police considered was too nice of a car for these young men to be driving.
Yes, I think this is something happening, and this, you know, this is a waste of resources also, because the law enforcement needs to allocate their resources to really stop the crime and not only trying to guess who is or who's not based on the skin color or the appearance of people.
The hearing on the three bills to end racial profiling in Oregon took place this afternoon at 3 p.m. at the Oregon State Legislature. The groups supporting the three bills to end racial and ethnic profiling in the state of Oregon are hoping the bills will pass by the end of this legislative session, which is currently scheduled to be completed at the end of June. For KBOO News, I'm Jenka Soderberg reporting.
Baltimore, Maryland has been keeping teenagers in solitary confinement for periods of time longer than legally allowed. One teen was kept in solitary for 143 days. Another teen was kept in solitary for 53 of his 105 days at the detention center. A review by the U.S. Justice Department's Division of Civil Rights is highly critical of the Baltimore City Detention Center. Federal prosecutors say a person's mental health can be damaged by being isolated for more than a few days, especially a teenager whose brain is still developing. The average stay in solitary for the teens in the detention center is 13 days, with many staying for far longer periods. 15 years ago, federal investigators determined that isolating youths in cells for lengthy periods of time was harmful to their mental health. The Maryland jail is still violating state laws and the U.S. Constitution, according to an investigation from 8 years ago. While several improvements were noted, the review found that only a few of the employees in the detention center have any training in adolescent development and trauma, much less in mental health and developmental disabilities. There's no consistent drug treatment, anger management program, education, rehabilitation, or even exercise, which is the constitutional right of the detainees. The average wait for a disciplinary hearing is 80 days for a first offense, which the Justice Department claims is grossly excessive and violates the basic principles of due process. Even more troubling is the fact that approximately 24% of the juveniles held in seclusion are ultimately found not guilty. Stephen Moyer, a police veteran who served as Deputy Juvenile Services Secretary in Maryland, was recently appointed to run the state's jails and prisons. He's promised to make juvenile detention reforms a top priority. Many of the 100,000 juveniles incarcerated have been in solitary confinement, often to allow a jail to comply with the Federal Prison Rape Elimination Act of 2012 that requires sight and sound separation of adult and juvenile prisoners. The Baltimore Detention Center keeps the juveniles separate from the adults and uses solitary strictly for punishment. Advocates for incarcerated individuals warn that solitary confinement causes problems for the kids, problems that stay with them their entire lives.
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren has upset the largest Wall Street banks with her populist views and calls for more regulations. The populist views of Warren and Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown have troubled the banks to the point where they are considering withholding all campaign contributions from United States Senate Democrats. The banks are calling on the Democratic Party to rein in the anti-banking populist rhetoric from liberal Democrats such as Warren and Brown if they wish to continue to receive campaign contributions. The banks threatening to withhold campaign contributions include J.P. Morgan, Citibank, Goldman Sachs, and Bank of America. Each of these banks were bailed out with U.S. taxpayer funds in the aftermath of the 2008 financial crash. The banks have emerged larger and more leveraged than they were before the bailout. Warren responded to the veil threat by saying, quote, "They can threaten or bully or say whatever they want, but we aren't going to change our game plan. It's up to us to fight back against a financial system that allows those who broke our economy to emerge from a crisis in record-setting shape while ordinary Americans continue to struggle," end quote. Late last year, Warren called for Citibank to be broken up as it had grown too large and was a systemic danger to the American financial system.
As a result of a lawsuit filed by six protesters in Ferguson, Missouri, three police agencies in the state will be required to cut back on the use of tear gas as a crowd control measure. A restraining order was placed on the St. Louis City Police, the St. Louis County Police, and the Missouri Highway Patrol that will require these agencies to give reasonable warning before activating chemical weapons on protesters. The lawsuit was dismissed last Thursday at the request of both sides after the settlement was reached. U.S. District Judge Carol Jackson, who dismissed the lawsuit, will supervise these three law enforcement groups for compliance until January 1, 2018. Charges of police brutality and racial profiling resulting from the death of Ferguson teenager Michael Brown last August resulted in several lawsuits filed by protesters. Three protesters testified at a December hearing that they were subjected to improper treatment by police, including the use of tear gas. The protesters were represented by Art City Defenders and the Advancements Project. Denise Lieberman of the Advancement Project said that the excessive force of the police against the protesters has not been seen since the civil rights movement and that the use of tear gas in Ferguson was a tactic to chill the movement. The consent decree will finally put a stop to those efforts. Each of the three law enforcement agencies will also pay the protesters $2,500 in legal costs.
Portland Mayor Charlie Hale said today he's temporarily banning city-funded trips to Indiana because of that state's recently passed religious freedom bill. Hale's statement follows similar bans from the mayors of Seattle and San Francisco. The governor of Connecticut said he would also forbid publicly funded travel to Indiana. Last week, Indiana's Governor Mike Pence signed the Religious Freedom Restoration Act into law, sparking criticism across the country. Pence claimed that the law is intended to protect Indiana businesses from government intrusion. Opponents argue that the law enables businesses in Indiana to discriminate against gays and lesbians on religious grounds. In his statement today, Hales called Pence and the Indiana legislature's actions blatant discrimination. Hales said, "Indiana isn't the first state to adopt this backward discriminatory policy, but most states have sexually sexual orientation language in their civil rights statutes to protect LGBT residents. Indiana doesn't offer these same protections. Hales plans to introduce a formal resolution Wednesday for the City Council to consider. In addition, the resolution calls on civic and business leaders to follow suit. Meanwhile, back in Indiana, the top two Republican lawmakers have announced they will be clarifying the language in which the bill, which will restrict it from allowing discrimination against members of the LGBT community. This update from the GOP came a day after Republican Governor Pence refused to back down from the bill, claiming that it was no mistake. The religious freedom bill is triggered a belief that this bill was direct retaliation against the LGBT community after same-sex marriage was legalized in Indiana last October. Indiana lawmakers claim that 20 states have already adopted similar bills and that their bill is no different. However, bowing to pressure from corporations and other local groups, states such as Georgia and Arizona have vetoed and tabled similar bills. Indiana's Democratic legislators are calling for a total repeal of the new law. Members of the Indianapolis City Council plan to introduce a resolution against the bill that would block it from being enforced in the city. Indianapolis is one of several places in the state that have ordinances outlawing employment discrimination on the basis of gender identity.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Janka Soderberg's interview with Angela Borth on the taking of her children by the Department of Human Services, followed by Lane Ponce and Michael Morrow on Labor Radio at 6. At 6:30 on Prison Pipeline, Karen James interviews Andy Coe of Partnership for Safety and Justice and Jane Downing, the Executive Director of Salem Center for Home and Safety. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. News and views from a hip-hop perspective, and stay tuned at 10 p.m. for the premiere episode of the Holy Crowley Hour or two. Tomorrow's weather is rainy with a chance of lightning storms. The forecasted high is 56, the low is 41. Today in history, in 1867, the U.S. government purchased Alaska from Russia for roughly 2 cents per acre of land. In 1999, a jury in Portland, Oregon, ordered Philip Morris to pay $81 million to the family of a man who died of lung cancer after smoking Marlboros for 40 years. It was the first case of its kind. The quote of the day is by poet and singer Reagan Butcher, who said, "Prison is like high school with knives."
Monsanto recently agreed to pay the $600,000 fine levied by the EPA for the unreported air pollution at its Soda Spring facility in Idaho. The penalty is for emissions of various air-polluting chemicals like hydrogen cyanide, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxides, and mercury between the years of 2006 and 2009. The facility has refined phosphate ore since 1952 and is operated by P4 Productions, LLC, a Monsanto subsidiary. Federal law requires that companies immediately report releases of toxic gases into local environments. A statement from both the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Justice claims that each of these chemicals are hazardous and can pose serious health risks to workers and the community if mishandled or released in an uncontrolled manner. Though it reached an agreement with the EPA, Monsanto now has a reduced reporting option. Instead of accounting for daily chemical releases, the arrangement allows for a single annual report.
Longtime political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal has reportedly been taken to a prison hospital in Pennsylvania after suffering a medical emergency. No further information is known at this time about what happened or Mumia's current condition. His supporters at prisonradio.org are updating the site with the latest information. Meanwhile, a case involving Mumia had a hearing in court today. A federal judge questioned state lawyers about a recently passed Pennsylvania law that was supposedly meant to protect the victims of crimes, but which Mumia's supporters say is a direct response to his speech at the Goddard College commencement ceremony. The law allows victims to seek civil injunctions against offenders who act in ways that, they claim, perpetuates mental anguish, including making any public statements. It was rushed through the Pennsylvania State Legislature last year, immediately after the commencement address that Mumia gave by phone from the federal prison where he's been held for 3 decades. The law is now being challenged on the grounds of violating the free speech rights of prisoners and their lawyers. A lawyer with the Attorney General's office told the judge that the law would apply even if someone has been arrested, but not tried or convicted. Lawyers for Abu Jamal and the other plaintiffs in the pair of cases said the law has already had a chilling effect on certain speech by affecting broadcast and publication plans.
Construction has slowed on several water pipelines slated to carry water to drought-stricken areas of rural New Mexico. Despite mounting concerns about drought and declining aquifers, state officials have had trouble securing funding for the pipeline. Federal funding for the project comes from the Federal Bureau of Reclamation, the agency in charge of allocating the nation's water resources. The Bureau estimates that the project could be done by 2029 at a cost of $3 billion, and they are obligated to pay for 3/4 of it. If current funding patterns hold, however, they will be able to only pay for less than 1/4 of that obligation. Even if the projects are completed, the National Resource Defense Council has voiced concerns about the pipelines. They say that the pipelines will overdraw sources already stretched too thin by increased demands and by climate change.
It's 5:37. Time Terry from Jim Hightower.
Ed, please call home. Edward Snowden, that is. Come quickly. Your country needs you. Once again, the American people are being victimized by a hush-hush blanket of official secrecy. This time, it's not about wholesale spying on us by our government, but a wholesale assault on our jobs, environment, health, and even our people's sovereignty by a cabal of global corporations and the Obama administration. Their weapon is a scheme hidden inside a scam called TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The scam is their claim that TPP is nothing but another free trade deal, albeit a whopper that ties our economy to Brunei, Vietnam, and 9 other nations around the Pacific Rim. But of the 29 chapters in this deal, only 5 are about tariffs and other trade matters. The real deal is in the 24 other chapters that create a supranational scheme of secretive tribunals that corporations from any TPP nation can use to challenge and overturn our local, state, and national laws. All a corporate power has to do to win in these closed tribunal proceedings is to show that any particular law or regulation might reduce its future profits. This enthrones a global corporate oligarchy over us. Yet it's been negotiated by the 12 countries in strict secrecy. Even members of Congress have been shut out, but some 500 corporate executives have been allowed inside to shape the partnership. Now that Obama and his corporate team are ready to ram it through Congress, he arranged a briefing to woo House Democrats. But he classified it as a secret session, meaning the lawmakers can't tell the people anything they learn. This is Jim Hightower saying, Holy Thomas Paine! Obama is hiding his oligarchic scheme from us because he knows we would overwhelmingly oppose it. It's government by sucker punch, and it's cowardly.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
A coalition from 14 countries at the Arab League summit announced yesterday they would create a joint military task force to support the attack led by Saudi Arabia in Yemen. The summit came as a Saudi-led coalition continued to bomb Houthi rebels in Yemen. The Arab League coalition did not specify which kind of threats it would respond to, but stated it would protect member states against threats at their request. However, Iraq, whose Shia-led government is closely aligned with Iran's government, said it would need more time to discuss the mission of the proposed force. According to the Ministry of Health's office in Yemen, 60 people have been killed and 500 people have been injured since the bombing began last Thursday.
The chief of the Fukushima nuclear power plant in Japan has admitted that the decommissioning and cleanup process may take 200 years longer than expected. In an interview with the Times of London, the chief admitted that the technology to clean up the melted nuclear reactors did not yet exist. The TEPCO executive stated that a giant technological leap forward will be needed to develop multiple new technologies in order to clean up the melted fuel reactor cores. Currently, the building housing the reactors and reactor core fuel materials is so radioactive that even robots cannot enter. A British corporation using state-of-the-art three-dimensional imaging to identify hotspots stated that at least three of the four reactors at Fukushima suffered full meltdowns. Large cracks in the basement containment area are allowing groundwater to flow over the molten fuel cores before emptying into the Pacific Ocean, located just yards away from the reactor buildings. Originally, cleanup plans called for a 40-year decommissioning period. Decommissioning involves removing all fuel core materials and either storing them in new water pools or placing them in dry cask tubes, which is considered to be the safest way to store reactor fuel cores. The reactors contain well over 50 different radioactive isotopes, including plutonium, which has a 28,000-year half-life. If the molten fuel cores burn through the basement floor into the ground, most experts believe that the highly radioactive fuel cores will never be recovered and will continue to pollute the Pacific Ocean on a daily basis for thousands of years.
A 27-year-old woman who was killed by a mob in Kabul is now being touted as a hero of her religion. 2 weeks ago, law student Farkanda went to the site of a shrine where she had seen peddlers selling good luck charms. She began to speak out against the peddlers for what she considered un-Islamic behavior. Then, one of the attendants at the shrine accused Farkanda of burning the Quran, and a mob began to form around the woman. The men beat her and set fire to her body. Initially, officials in Afghanistan defended the lynching of the young woman. However, cell phone videos revealed what happened at the shrine. The man who accused Farkanda of burning the Quran now sits in prison along with a dozen other men involved in the killing. Since the killing, the young law student has been turned into a religious martyr. Last Thursday, hundreds of Afghan Islamic clerics gathered in Kabul to protest the death of Farkanda. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Ken Yoshikawa, Ryan Stroyer, Don Zer, Ken Jones, and Rosalind Scott. The producer is Eric Takeoff. Our engineer is Danielle Parks. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. If you'd like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, here are the phone numbers. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. Oregon Governor Kate Brown's number is 503-378-3111. Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM. K282BH Philomath, 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Rosalyn Scott.
And I'm Ken Jones. Stay tuned now as KBOO's Janka Soderberg interviews Angela Borth, whose children were taken by the Department of Human Services. Good night, Rosalyn.
Good night, Ken. Good night, Danielle.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
We are joined on the line by Angela Borth, who is a Portland mom whose children were recently taken by DHS. Can you tell us when they were taken and what the reason given was?
They were taken March 3rd. I had gone in on February 26th to a doctor's appointment, just to well child check for my children. I think my five-year-old needed to have shots, you know, his normal five-year-old vaccinations. The doctor had told me that my daughter was short stature. That's what she had written in her in the report.